Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. If you're interested in learning more about KPP Financial's family of investment programs, you can start on investtalk.com. Click on the Investments tab. See more about the Balanced Income Program. Using a time-tested strategy for identifying undervalued assets, KPP Financial created a strategy designed to accommodate investors who have a lower risk tolerance, but still want some exposure to the potential growth of the stock market. Again, it's there for you to see, if you want, on investtalk.com. End of commercial, and now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and let's talk about investing. Today is Thursday, May 5th, and you're listening to Invest Talk. I want to start off with a quote from Warren Buffett. If you don't know who Warren Buffett is, you must be new to investing, and that's okay. He is the world's most successful investor. His company, Berkshire Hathaway, just completed their annual shareholders meeting, and it's standing room only there. Now, one of his most well-known quotes is, "I never attempt to make money on the stock market. I buy on the assumption that they could close the market the next day and not open it for 5 years. He is a buy and holder. He's a value investor. Mr. Buffett is worth about $60 billion, so you kind of might want to listen to him. He's very good at what he does. He is getting older, and I'm worried about who's going to replace him at Berkshire Hathaway, but he is still the world's best investor. Yesterday, we talked about a survey about the 401k investors, and they were pleased with their plans. And this is in spite of the fact that their returns were far below the market. A large percentage said they didn't take advantage of guidance from plan resources to help them make decisions. And my final point was, they made the major mistake of watching the market too closely. The result is they were selling when the market was down out of fear and buying when the prices were up out of greed. That's the deadliest misstep of the average investor. Not recognizing that you should buy when the market's down and sell when it's high. Mr. Buffett's advice. If you aren't willing to own a stock for 10 years, you shouldn't be owning it for 10 minutes. So your initial decision to buy a stock or fund should be well thought out. So how do you do proper research on this stock? How much time does it take? What kind of tools do you need? Well, maybe we can talk about that today. Maybe that's something we could discuss. Today, we're going to look at dividend-paying stocks. And this has been a favorite of everybody's for some time now with the interest rates so very, very low. And so everybody's been pushed into the market. Maybe that's not a bad thing. You know, because maybe because we're going to live a lot longer that we are getting out of stocks too soon. You know, we're 65. Maybe shouldn't get out of the stock market. I'm just thinking that, you know, if you make age 65, I think the stat is you'll live to age 91, and that's getting longer and longer and longer. So your money has to last longer. You got to grow it more. Anyways, I'm counting on you to make the agenda today. As always, we want to answer your questions. Keep the program relevant to you. And maybe you want to ask about the analytical tools available to investors. We have tools that I have that, you know, all that research. When you call and ask me about a stock, I'm looking up a bunch of software. Maybe you want to ask me about that. You may have questions about real estate. That's good too. Are you thinking about selling your home or going to a retirement home or selling down to live in a smaller place in your later years? I plan on doing that. How do you evaluate that portion of your assets, your housing? Of course, I want to hear from you. Let's check in now with our 24-hour listen line. You can call anytime you want, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. My name is Robert. I live in Sacramento. I had a question about, I want to understand the crack spreads for oil refiners. I don't understand how, if they were supposed to be able to make more money by low oil prices, why are they being hit so hard during low oil prices? If you could please explain that to me, I would appreciate it. I would imagine that all of the refiners' stock prices should be at 52-week highs right now. Thank you very much. I listen on the podcast. I look forward to hearing the answer. Thank you.
So what he's talking about is the why aren't the refineries making a lot more money simply because oil prices are very low. Remember, that's their big input cost is they take oil, buy it, and then refine it and sell it to you. The spread there between what they buy and what they sell. How come they aren't doing much, much better? Well, a lot of the refineries are owned by big oil, so that's not necessarily benefits to them. And I haven't read anything as to why they necessarily haven't been making more money. You would think that they would as oil prices fell. And a lot of times companies buy oil forward at discount prices. So some of the refineries have very long-term contracts. So they're not getting the full benefit of lower oil prices, and yet, you know, there's a lot of pressure to lower gas prices. So, but I haven't really, to be honest, come across a lot of research as to why they're not making more money on this situation with oil prices low. Oil industry is pretty complex, So. I'm sorry, I won't be able to answer that question with any more intelligence than that. 888-99-CHART, how stock dividends could rescue your retirement. That's our main talking point. How stock dividends could rescue your retirement. Also want to talk about housing. We haven't talked about housing in a while. What about foreclosures? What's going on in that? Are there still a lot of houses underwater? And you notice that the market has had no, doesn't have a really a direction yet? Is it because the market fell sharply at the beginning of the year, recovered most of that, came back right up the top, and now it's starting to roll over again? Are we, what? There's no direction. I want to discuss that a little bit. Tomorrow we get the jobs report, the official jobs report. The ADP report came in earlier. What should we be looking at in that jobs report? What's the most important component of that jobs report? Those are things I want to talk about, but of course, you're going to come first. The market was flat. The Dow was up 9, the NASDAQ was down 9, and the S&P was 0. Didn't move up or down by the end of the day. So it was kind of a boring day. Probably everybody's kind of sitting back waiting for the jobs report to come out tomorrow, maybe, and see what that looks like. Or maybe no one's decided what to do yet. It just seems like the bull market we had up until last year, seems like that bull market is just tired. We're tired. And maybe we're in for another correction. If you look at this year, you know, you had a rebound of all the losses made in January. Remember, it was the worst January in history. The worst January for the stock market in history. And it took us several months to make that back. And then that seemed like a lot of work, and now we're tired. The market looks tired. Anyways, I want to talk about whatever's on your mind. The market is the market, everybody. What's on your mind financially? What do you want to talk about? You're listening to Invest Talk. I invite you to join our Invest Talk Insiders. It's a way to have access to all kinds of information for free. Market commentaries, list of recorded webinars, including the most recent one, Surviving and Prospering in a Volatile Market. Sign up free on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. If you have a question or want to share your investing experience, why not do it now? I welcome your call. 888-99-CHART.
Hi guys, great show. I listen to you on Stitcher Radio online. I was wondering what you think of Freeport MacMoran at these levels. The symbol is FCX. I appreciate it, and I'll listen to you on podcast. Thanks.
Okay, Freeport MacMoran engaged in exploration development of copper, gold, silver, and molybdenum mines in Indonesia, North and South America. Okay, it is a big company, $14 billion size, so you really have no fear of it going out of business. Earnings have been falling, which makes sense, right? Economies around the world, commodity prices really got crushed the last couple, 3 years. And earnings have gone from $2.09 a share in 2014 to 22 cents a share in 2015. Now, 2016, that's going to double to $40 a share. And then 2015, it's almost doubling again. It is over doubling again, 97 cents a share. It's $11 stock. Now, if those earnings are to be believed, that means the stock is underpriced. So it's really a question of what do you think of gold and copper and different, you know, precious metals? Or do you think they are recovering? And do you think they're going to continue to recover? Because all these gold and mining companies V-bottomed right at the beginning of the year and started to move up. And so did this. You know, this was selling for under $50 a share. And today, $50. This was selling for $5, $4 and something cents a share. And now it's $11.29. So it's already made a huge run. I still think it's got more to go. I mean, I think gold has more to go. And I'm not a big gold person, as I've told you before. This is, to me, gold is just pretty much a trade, these mining companies. I think that you want to buy at Freeport MacMoran on any pullback, any kind of small pullback. Even now, this is a good price right here to start adding. If it goes down to $10, I'd add more. But I think it's underpriced. Just to give you an idea, in 2009, it ranged from 10 to 43, the price of the stock. 2010, 28 to 60. 2011, 28 to 61. 2012, 30 to 48. 2013, 26 to 38. 2014, 20 to 39. And 2015, 6 to 23. Okay? Now, I think it's going to go back into low 20s. Yeah, it's my opinion. Therefore, I'd be a buyer. This might have to be patient. I can't tell you when it's going to go there. Let's move to our talking point for the day. This was supposed to be the year interest rates and treasury bonds and bills would finally begin to rise. Remember, the Fed rose increase in 0.25 point, kind of hinted at maybe 4 times this year. And even today, I saw an article by one of the Federal Reserve presidents saying, remember, there's 12 or 13 of them or whatever. And he said today that they're going to raise their rates 3 or 4 times this year. I don't think so, but he does, you know, maybe they are. But they were supposed to go up this year. That would help everybody that are trying to take less risk and keep their money safe. Maybe the CD rates would go up and savings rates would go up, but that's not what's happened. And retirees still need to draw income from their investments, but they're not getting any income. This is the problem. So where are you going to get it? Well, most of investors are looking for equities, dividend paying things. Now, a problem here is that a lot of people are looking for high dividend paying equities and not understanding the risks that they're taking. Okay, because there is very good dividend paying stocks out there that help outpace inflation. We have very low inflation right now. So, what you need to separate is high quality payers of dividends versus cyclical payers or dividend payers that are not don't have the staying power. What's high quality? How do you identify high quality? Well, there are things out there. I have recommended the book called Dividend Achievers. Dividend Achievers. It's a kind of a book that comes out every couple of years, a paperback, and tells you how good or bad dividend payers are and what are the best ones out there over the longest period of time. It's a good source of information. But there's other sources of information. Fidelity has a good source of information. There's lots of good sources. High quality dividends doesn't mean high dividends. It means quality dividend payers who increase their dividends every year. Johnson & Johnson. We own Johnson & Johnson. I'm not recommending you buy it. But that's the kind of company. Procter & Gamble. Don't own Procter & Gamble. But that's the kind of company we're talking about. This is InvestTalk. Retirement planning requires a thorough analysis of future needs and income potential. Do you need help with that? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. Let's go talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to find out what your thoughts are on TSO, Tesoro.
picking some up in the low 70s because it looks like it's heading that direction, but I don't know if it'll drop that far. But
it may, may not. Tesoro, everybody, Tesoro Corporation engaged in a refinery and marketing of petroleum products in the Western United States. So it's a refiner, and it has been under a little pressure because oil prices have been rising. And it started, it bounced off a low in about, we've got about 68 or so, $64.
Right.
Yeah, so bounced off that low, moved on up to close to 90, now it's back down to 77. It's going to make, it's selling at about a 10 forward PE, which is fairly low. Good return on equity, very good cash flow, very solid company. Sales have been going down, you know, but that's probably going to change. So are you buy it when it feels like it's cheap, and I think in the low 70s would be a good price to pick it up. I really do. It's a huge company.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's a good, solid company paying 2.6% dividend.
Okay,
Art? Thanks for the call, Art. Let's go to Mark in the Bay Area. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Steve. Great show.
Thank you.
So, anyway, recently I bought Apple at 92. Then I got into Facebook on a little breakout. And then I'm calling about UA also, you know, Under Armour. And I just got that a couple of days ago, too. And they're all like a quarter position so far, just seeing how the market goes. So what do you think about UA? Should I add to it? When should I, or what do you think?
I definitely think you should
add
to it. Yeah, it's Under Armour. UA is Under Armour. Mark's performance apparel, footwear, accessories made from moisture-wicking synthetic fabrics. And, you know, it's a solid company growing 25, 30% in sales every quarter for 2 years. Earnings have been consistently rising 25% or so every year for as long as you can go far back. And because of that consistency, the stock price is not cheap. It's not. It's a $39 stock going to make 85 cents next year. And that's 27%
right.
higher than this year. So you take a look at a PE at 85 cents and you say, wait a minute, that's like a 35 PE. Because
yeah,
it's
because
it's so consistent. It deserves it. It has very low debt. It makes really good money.
Okay.
The management owns 17%. They make very good decisions. So yeah, I think you pick up more on any pullback, Mark. I do. I like
the pullback. What level? What levels do you talk
okay.
about the levels? I'll take the answer on the year.
Okay.
Okay.
I think the pullback is in your mid 30s. Only, and they're at 39.75 now, so it's making the pullback now. I would wait a few days and see if you can get it a little bit lower, but as soon as it starts to recover, I buy into it. And yeah, it might come down if the market comes down for the summer, you know, where we have a pullback, and I'm hoping that that's when you'll get your best opportunity, but this is one of those companies you would like to own, and I don't know how, with its consistency, I don't see how it's going to go lower, but it cannot stumble and make a mistake. I'll say that. They make a mistake and the earnings all of a sudden don't look as good. The sales don't look good. The stock will get tanked. Just so you know, there's that danger. There's dangers, but it's also been very consistent for years, not just this year or last year. Several years it's been consistently growing, hitting all the marks it needs to hit. I kind of like it. And I actually own some of their stuff, and I do like their stuff. Let's talk about housing. We haven't talked about that in a long time. There's still pockets of distressed housing out there. Then what does distress mean? Any housing, any people owning a house where they own 125% of the value of the house. There's pockets out there. Matter of fact, there's 6.7 million of them. 6.7 million homeowners are seriously underwater. 6.7 million. That's 12% of all mortgages. Now, the peak was 28.6% in 2012. So it's come way off the peak. Way off the peak. What are some of the worst states? Nevada, 22%. Illinois, 22%. Ohio, 20%. Florida, 18%. And Michigan, 17%. Those are the top. So Nevada is still the worst hit housing market and still has the most people that are underwater. Just so you know, I think that's pretty interesting. So, we've come a long ways. And are we back to normal? We're back to close to normal. We are not that far off. So that's a good thing. You know, it's really a good thing. Now, the question you really want to ask yourself, are we at a peak again? I can tell you this, those people, you people live in Silicon Valley, sure feels like a peak up there. I mean, that housing market has been so hot in the last few years. The San Francisco Bay Area down to San Jose. And for those who are not familiar, San Francisco is what? About an hour drive, 60 miles or so north of San Jose. You know, San Jose is at the end of the bay south. And that's where, you know, the Silicon Valley is. Very nice area. We're glad you're with us today on Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You can see my portfolio check updates on investtalk.com. I'll be in San Ramon May 11th, San Jose the 25th. Time to set up an appointment.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Our own licensed realtor, Justin Klein, along with Chevy Ackeson, who leads an award-winning realty team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone on May 12th. They can answer any and all of your real estate questions and offer some suggestions, too. To reserve your time, just click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Reviews right there on InvestTalk.com. Continue now with this Thursday, May 5th, Invest Talk. Invest Talk is produced live 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Call and join in on the conversation or record your question on our anytime line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Gavin calling from Concord, California. I really enjoy your show. I listen to you on podcasts. I heard something the other day on TV. Someone was talking about how banks, stocks, are a good hedge against a rising interest rate environment. I was just wondering if you could shed some light and let me know if this is at all true and if we should be looking at buying some of the big banks. I'd appreciate it very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the reason why they say that is because big banks make more money with higher interest rates. They make more money. So when rates are rising, they are a good hedge because they won't go down simply because the rates are rising. That's not what would cause them to go down. Now, it might cause, they might go down because if you raise their interest rates, the economy might roll over into a recession, then the banks will get hit. Big banks have done nothing for a number of years, and there's a very good reason why they have not moved. And that's because of the Dodd-Graham, the rules and regulations of the Dodd-Graham Act is very onerous for big banks. Banks too big to fail banks. They have to jump through a million more hoops than they used to. And they can't make the money they used to make. They can't take the risks. Therefore, they can't make the money. Totally understandable. That's why I'm not keen on big banks. And even if interest rates do go up, I still wouldn't be an owner of a big bank. I haven't owned banks in some time. It's just they just don't have the horses because they can't. They can't. Doesn't mean they won't go out of business. They won't go out of business. I mean, they will make money, but, you know, I mean, if you're looking at some of the bigger banks, you'll see very low PE ratios, very low or no growth rates. Yeah, I mean, just what's exciting about them? There isn't any. But the answer is yes. They are a good hedge against rising interest rates because a rising interest rate environment will help them. Won't hurt them. It will help them. To help them make more money. So in that sense, yes, but you can't ignore the rest of the picture, the rest of the economic picture. When interest rates rise, that usually slows the economy. A slower economy means less earnings for banks. So you got to look at the whole picture there. Be very, very careful. Okay, the market has had no direction. It hasn't had a direction a year and a quarter. You know, all 2015, what did it do? Nothing. So far, 2016, what's it doing? Nothing. You know, so it's done absolutely nothing. And it looks like a lot of, if you look at indexes around the world, looks like a lot of markets are doing absolutely nothing. Not just the U.S., it's everywhere. Why is that? Well, stock prices are not cheap because earnings have been falling for three quarters in a row. Sales have been falling for four quarters in a row. And yet the stock market is still pretty flat for the last year and a half, 2 years. That means the E is going down, the P is staying steady, but the relationship between the P and E is going up. The number is going up, meaning the stock market prices are higher than average and higher than they should be, especially in a no earnings growth environment. Consumers also don't seem to be spending the money like they used to. They don't seem to be reacting to lower interest rates and higher incomes like they used to when they would spend more money. They are not. They're spending less money. Probably have learned their lessons from being burned in the dot-com and then the housing, the dot-com implosion and the housing implosion and, you know, the deep recession. So they're just being very careful. Look, at oil prices are low and they're still not spending now savings. Consumers drive our economy and they're being very cautious. They are spending, but not prolifically. Not even the corporations are not spending very much on capital expenditures. Capital expenditures would improve, like, you know, manufacturing processes or whatever. It would make them more efficient. Therefore, productivity would go up. Therefore, you know, our standard of living would go up. But they're not spending money either. Corporations are being very cautious, mostly because they're not making very much more money. Their earnings are going down. It's a pretty tough environment we are in right now. How long it'll be tough, it's hard to know. I don't know. Is it time to downsize, upgrade your property? Should you consider a reverse mortgage? Justin Klein, along with Chevy Atkinson, who heads up an award-winning realtor team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone May 12th. To reserve your time, just click on Contact Justin and write in Real Estate Review on InvestTalk.com.
Now, InvestTalk Real Estate. Chevy Atkinson, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about upgrading your house before selling.
Now, Chevy, a lot of sellers have kitchens that might be outdated, bathrooms that might be outdated, different parts of their house that need work, right? And generally, I think a lot of people have the question, should I fix those problem areas of my home? Or should I just sell it as is? And what type of fixes are usually worth the expenditure?
It's a great question, Justin. So, you know, what I always tell people is what sells homes are kitchens and bathrooms. Obviously, generally speaking, the wife is making the decision. So the kitchen is going to be what really sells. The master bath is also very important. With that being said, you know, I work with a lot of flippers that we buy homes both on the market as well as go straight to the trustee sale. And what I've found, though, occasionally to get the best return for my flip investors, sometimes we find that the neighborhoods really don't require a remodeled kitchen or remodeled bathroom because they're so popular and the range from the high to the low isn't that large. So it's extremely neighborhood specific. Sometimes my investors have a much better return, and so would a normal seller, by just leaving the kitchen and leaving the bathroom, knowing that the neighborhood is going through maybe a rejuvenation. And so the older homes are selling for enough of a premium that by the time you put in the money for the kitchen and bathroom, you're not getting it back out.
So you're saying a lot of buyers are redoing it themselves anyway, so they're not really going to care.
And they'd rather have it done their own way. So as a result, I'm seeing, like, I mean, take a neighborhood, for example, that's selling for $1 million. You know, a remodeled kitchen, a remodeled bathroom on the low end is going to cost, you know, probably close to $50,000. So if you can sell that same home for $950 to $970 and let someone do it on their own, save the time, save the effort, save the headache, and don't do it. If the range is $800,000 to $1 million, you can spend $40,000 or $50,000 and then get $1 million versus $800,000 to $850,000. Then we'd probably advise them to do it if they have the money and they have the time and want to put in the effort.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now, what about exterior features? Thinking of painting the house, maybe putting a new roof on. What if your pool is old?
Yeah, I mean, some neighborhoods, a pool home will actually go for a premium. A lot of times the pool home doesn't have any premium because the community has a pool. pools, generally speaking, aren't the best investment for a property. And again, it's very neighborhood specific. But one thing that is true is in most neighborhoods, buyers don't have that much of a vision. So you need to show them the vision. So a lot of times you do need to do the kitchen and bathroom. But like I said, there's exceptions. But that's why it is important to have a professional truly analyze the market and tell you, is it worth it to do it or not? Someone that's selling potentially hundreds of homes, if I was only doing 4 deals a year, I'd be nowhere near the advisor to my clients as we are today because we buy and sell so many properties.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Jay in Fremont. How are you doing, Jay?
I'm fine, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I appreciate the call.
Steve, I had a question on Infinera, which is INFN, and CenturyLink, which is CTL.
Okay. CTL. I want
to know if they are good buyers.
Okay, let's look at CTL because that's the one I punched in first. So, provides local exchange, long-distance network access, broadband services to rural communities in 37 states. It's a $15 billion company. It hasn't grown in 2 years. It hasn't shrunk. It's been kind of flat. Sales have been kind of flat for 2 years. Earnings are going down a couple percentage points. And because of that, the stock has taken a pretty good, it's taken a pretty good dump down. Got as low as about $22 a share this year. And then it rose from that January low, just like all the other stocks, to 32 or so. Now today down 28 because apparently had some disappointing earnings. It was really took a hit today, about down almost 9% one day. So I'm sure that was earnings. And it has a very good dividend of 7.7%. And that 7% is very sustainable. That's only about a 50% payout ratio. So I don't think they're going to cut the dividend. I don't think that's in the cards. And what you want to do if you're buying it for the dividend, Jay, wait till the stock settles down. You know, where is it going to, because of the big drop today. Let's see if it drops more. It could easily go down a couple more points. Once it settles down, and if you want to buy this for the dividend, that's a very good dividend, you can do so because it's not in danger of being cut, and they're big enough, solid enough to continue to pay the same dividend. I think they will. Okay? Jay, appreciate the call. Thank you. That was CenturyLink. CTL is the symbol. CTL. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Now, tomorrow the jobs report comes out. You know, the official jobs report for April. Now, the ADP number, which is the unofficial number that comes in usually a few days before, a couple days before, came out, you know, yesterday or the day before. And the expectation was for 200,000 jobs and was only 150,000 jobs. Now, the official report expectation is also 200,000 jobs. But I don't know if that number is going to be the key. Let's say it's 175. I think people are expecting a little bit less because the ADP number was a little bit less. If it's really a lot less, then it's a problem. And if it's really a lot more, there's going to be a rally in the market. But I don't think that's going to be the story tomorrow. I don't think that's going to be the story. What I think the story might be, and what the Federal Reserve is looking at, is wage growth. Remember, it's a jobs report, so it talks about wage growth. And year over year, wage growth is up 2.3%. If Fed is looking for any signs of inflation, and the job market is getting a little tighter, so they're thinking and worrying about inflation. Are we going to see inflation? And if they see inflation, that will give a little bit more emphasis that they're going to raise rates. A little bit more emphasis on raising rates if they see wage inflation. For some reason, I don't feel you're going to see much of wage inflation. It's hard for me to see it, even though the jobs are, there's a lot, and there's been some evidence that wages are going up, yes, but I don't think up enough to really cause much of an inflation issue. I don't see that. So that's what we're going to get tomorrow, jobs report. Let's take a question from Glenn in Camp Pendleton. If you don't know where Camp Pendleton is, it's a very big Marine base right on the ocean between San Diego and Orange County, where I live. Been there forever and ever and ever. Camp Pendleton. The anytime number is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Hi, just have a question on what should I be doing. I have no debt. I have $40,000 in the bank, and I have I maxed out on my Roth IRA contribution. We're looking at purchasing the house, my wife and I, but we just have our money pretty much just sitting. So if you can address that, I'd appreciate it, and thank you very much.
Well, I think you let it sit because it's your house money. If that's a house money that you have earmarked for buying a house, I would not take chances in the stock market with it. That's just not a good idea. Yeah, I know you can't make any money in the savings account, money market account. You could put it in a CD if you know you're not going to use it for the next year or 6 months. But I would, you know, maybe get a little higher interest rate that way, a little bit better savings rate. But I would not expose it to the stock market because it could go down. You know, and this is your money for your house, the house you want to live in. So I wouldn't take that kind of a risk. So that's what I would do. Let's go to William in Santa Clara. How you doing, William?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing great. I'm calling in regards to the stock for Fitbit, symbol FIT. Yesterday they had earnings report, and this morning after they dropped about 15%. I think they're at somewhere close to 18 today. And we just reading some articles online and watching the news about how the earnings report was presented. Mm-hmm. It seems like that they beat earning expectations, but the way the report was presented, it seemed like the CEO didn't have a good forecast of what the future holds, and that Fitbit spent a lot of money in order to generate the profit. So mm-hmm. I want to get your take on what you see about Fitbit, if I should hold on to this and kind of go for the ride or cut the losses.
Okay. Fitbit, Inc. Develops wearable connected health and fitness trackers and mobile apps that wirelessly sync with its devices. So, you know, you've seen them on TV, the watch-type device. It's not necessarily a watch, but that's what it is. And they're going to make $1.41 next year after making $1.13 this year, after making $1.11 last year, 55 cents a year before. Sales and earnings have done very, very well for Fitbit. And it's not expensive. It's not expensive. My biggest worry is competition. Doesn't seem like they have a product that kind of, you know, tells me that it's going to be unique. Sales used to be over 100, 200% on a quarterly basis. Most recent quarter, only up 50%. Still very good, right? Up 50%. But when you have a trajectory of sales going down, everybody doesn't like the stock. It IPO'd at $20 in 2015. Today it's at $13.88. It's not a stock that I would hold, but I would definitely get out if it breaks below $12.50. Just give up, get out, take your money and leave. That's what I would do. I would hold on to it unless it breaks that low. You're listening to Invest Talk. Recently, U.S. Treasuries have been going higher, yields have been going lower. And that's how bonds work. The lower the yield goes, the higher the value of the bond. So U.S. Treasuries are the same. And even though, despite the fact that the Fed is on the path to raise rates, even though what I think you're seeing is everybody, no one really believes that they're going to happen. Why would U.S. Treasuries go up and yields go down if the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates? They wouldn't, because no one believes it. Just to give you an idea, if you bought a two-year Treasury, it pays 0.758%, 0.75% for a two-year Treasury. A 30-year Treasury, 2.66. And you would usually say, well, gee, that's really low yields. Yeah, but just think if you were in Europe. Then negative yields. Japan, negative yields. Australia just lowered their rate. So our yields look fairly attractive for a very secure return. Very secure return. And if the rates actually go lower, they get capital appreciation as well as a secure return. And you got to remember, all these institutions around the world, I'm talking about banking institutions and retirement accounts and pension funds, all of them are insurance companies, all of them are required to have a certain amount of very secure assets, and that is U.S. Treasuries. So there's reasons why they'll still keep buying no matter what the rate is. So I think it is possible that U.S. Treasuries could go lower, and it really depends on the economy. If the economy starts picking up, then they'll probably raise the rates and rates will go higher. But is that going to happen? Let's try to answer one more question before our hour is up. 888-99-CHART is our 24-hour listener line. You can call it anytime you want.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Gary from Concord, and I'm curious what you think of the price of Regeneron pharmaceuticals these days, and where do you think an entry point would be? Thank you. Like your show. Bye.
Regeneron Pharmaceuticals develops drugs to treat eye disease, inflammatory diseases, and cancer. It's a $40 billion company. $40 billion. It's not small. Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. They're selling at $377 a share. That means they probably haven't split in a while. And it's really interesting. Insiders have been buying as the stock price has been going down. So the stock price has been going down. It was at 580 just 6 months ago or so. So it has been going down. It's still not necessarily an inexpensive stock. It's going to make $16.28 next year, but $11.47 this year. So $16, you know, you got to talk, it's a 20 PE ratio or so, 20 plus PE. So it's not cheap, but the return on equity is 45%. Cash flow is 14%, and it's growing its sales 30, 40, 50% per quarter. So it deserves to be higher price. So my question, my suggestion is, as I look at a chart, it looks like it's really close to a bottom, and this would be a triple bottom. If it bounces up like it did today, I think you want to be a buyer of this stock, a buyer of this stock. I like the fact that it's anti-cyclical, meaning it won't go up or down based solely on the economy, because it's in the area it's in, drugs, treatment, diseases, those things still have to be bought and sold no matter what the recession is. If we're in a recession or booming, it doesn't matter. So I kind of like that part of it, and I think it's a decent buy at this price. REGN, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. Good company. I think it looks pretty good. Not too much, barely any debt at all. I mean, it's got some good, management owns 10%. Of a $40 billion company. That's a lot. Our time is up. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note, and I will be back with you, I promise. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. And by the way, if you have a question about finding strong dividend-paying stock, let's hear from you. Please give me a call. If you're an InvestTalk insider, you can access a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks or other equities that pay steady dividends. It's free. If you sign up, it's free to sign up, easy to sign up. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the investment tab. And don't forget that I will be in San Ramon next week on the 11th and San Jose on the 25th. If you want to meet with me, now's the time to call, email, set up an appointment. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And we can do it again tomorrow if you like.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.
InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.